There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all here on this Friday. And if you didn't catch it in the news update or when we talked about it at the beginning of last hour, Salman Rushdie. Now, I don't have it other than I imagine his condition is not good. They said he was stabbed in the neck, helicopter flighted out there. But all these years later, you know, like back in late 80s, the fatwa came out and the $3 million bounty to kill. I remember, I mean, being a kid and this being a thing we talked about for like around the kitchen table kind of stuff. And then today in Western New York, AP reporting that somebody rushed the stage where Salman Rushdie was about to speak and was punching and stabbing him there. And we'll watch this. When we get an update on it, we will let you know. Y'all say hello. You know this guy. He's my friend, Dale Leash, Lanyap, LanyapMobile.com, and a snappy dresser to boot. Hey, Dale.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, if you're, I mean, you remember the, I mean, you're younger than me, but do you remember the Salman Rushdie talk? I mean, that this guy was, you know, he had a price on his head for a book he wrote?
I don't remember it at all, to be honest with you. Now,
it's
you know,
a time
I was born
thing,
in 1984, so
right.
Maybe that's the reason, but I don't remember it at
it
all.
It was a huge deal, man. It was like you had a head of state say, this guy wrote this book, it's blasphemous, so he needs to be killed. I mean, here's Ayatollah Khomeini saying, yeah, you need to kill him, and here's $3 million to do it. And now here we are in 2022, and it looks like maybe somebody took him up on it.
Yeah, man, that's serious. I only remember him from the references on Seinfeld back in the day. That's all I remember, is that Kramer thought he saw him.
okay, that's right.
Yeah.
It's funny how we remember stuff. It seems like it's been since the 80s that, listen to this segue here, seems like it's been since the 80s that you and I were talking about redistricting for the city of Mobile. It hasn't been that long.
Ooh.
You see that? You like that? You like that pivot?
Yeah.
But it came to a head or a final decision for now on Tuesday? What happened here?
Yeah, you know, this has been something like 8 months, I guess, maybe a little less, maybe 6 months. We've been talking about redistricting 27 weeks, I guess. And it's a
long time.
It's been a long time. And so, yeah, last Tuesday or Tuesday, I apologize. Tuesday, they finally voted on a plan. They voted on, we've talked about the three different maps that were presented or brought up on the council agenda. They passed the one that the one that the council came up with. And so it'll you know, we'll have four black majority districts, with District 7 having a black voting age population of 53%.
But wasn't it in the mayor's plan? I mean, it was majority at that point too, right? It just went up in the amount of majority.
That's exactly right. The final map that the mayor presented had 50.6%, 51. I mean, for journalism purposes, we round up to 51%. So it's about 51% black voting age majority in District 7 in the mayor's plan. This plan that they approved bumped it up by about 2%, or a little over 2%, and so that's basically where we are. And I wanna point this out. Previous, I think previous the legal thought on this previously was that the new districts basically started when the redistricting plan was put into effect. However, this council has been advised that redistricting starts when the next election happens. So the councilors will represent their previous district, even though the new plan has been approved. We don't basically have to worry about the new plan until the election, unless we have annexation, then we could have a whole new plan.
Well, yeah, we're gonna get to that here in just a minute. In these changes, so that would only go into effect after the election. Let's talk about some of the changes. I know a lot of discussion of, you know, District 7 and the change. For everybody to know, I mean, if you move one line, you got to move other lines to do this. So it was District 1, Spring Hill, being pretty much, what, out of 7 and now into 1? Or some of Spring Hill going into 5, but some other parts going into 1? Can I explain that?
No. Spring Hill's going all into District 5.
It's all 5. Okay.
There was a lot of confusion. The vast majority of... It's hard to see it's hard to see where the lines stop and start even on the map, but the map, the compromise map, has the majority of Spring Hill going from District 7 to District 5. I know it was reported other places that it was going into District 1, but they just got their maps confused.
Okay, well, good. Thanks for clearing that up.
That's the difference between that's basically the large difference between what they had in the community map that was put together by the Southern Poverty Law Center and the map that was put together by the council. That was the big change. The black voting age population stayed about the same between the first the second map and the third map that was introduced, but the community map, the second map, had Spring Hill split between District 1 and District 5. And the map that the council approved basically took Spring Hill from District 7 and put it in just all of it in District 5.
So it goes into Joel Dave's, because some of Spring Hill was already in 5, but the rest going in. You quote in this story too the person who has that job right now in District 7 and Gina Gregory talking about what the work she's done in District 7. I was in 7 for a while before I was in 5, I always saw her as being very busy. And the newsletter would come out, I'm like, my gosh, that's a bunch of stuff going on.
She's very good at what she does on the council. She's a talented politician, but also she seems, at least to me, she seems like she works hard. And she gets results. I have to say that as an impartial observer, she seems to be very good at what she does. And so, we haven't heard much from her on the record about how she's feeling about all of these changes. But I did find it striking that she said she wasn't consulted about the council plan, that no one called her. She didn't even get the courtesy. She didn't get a courtesy phone call about the plan.
So, wait, the other members, of the council,
back, but it was done without her consultation. And that's part of the reason why she felt so empowered by the first map. In the first map, every council member had a say in what was going to happen to their districts, at least as far as they could, as much as they could. And for this to have come down so squarely on her district and only her district being the big swing one way or the other, I think she definitely had an issue. I mean, you could tell by what she was saying. She had an issue with that, and she wanted to let people know, that I've worked hard for this part of my district, and I'm sad that I'm losing it.
Yeah, but the part that stands out to me, I mean, obviously there was somewhere that they were going to make a move here to get it from 51% to 53%. But you're saying that, talking to her, listening to her, that no other member of the council called her on this? I mean, it was done like everybody did this. It was in the know except the person that runs District 7?
I mean, that is how I interpreted what she said on the council, at the council meeting, and no one really on the council fought her on that point. So I have to assume that it's accurate. I mean, I didn't pull the council members involved in the plan and ask if they reached out to her, but that's what she said, and I have to, you know, I tend to take her word for it.
That's something. And I remember when it happened. So the vote was what, 6 yes, and did Councilman Gregory, she abstain or vote no? What was I saw some different things. What was that? Did she?
Well, again, the accurate.
Yeah.
The accurate reporting would be that it was a unanimous vote with one abstention.
Okay.
So it was 6-0 with one abstention. She abstained from the final vote. However, I've never seen a council meeting with as many abstentions as I saw on Tuesday. And let me make a public plea to the politicians listening to this radio show today. Please don't abstain from a vote unless you are somehow involved in the decision, in the you know, the group. If there's a clear or perceived conflict of interest, please abstain. But I'm really frustrated with the level of abstentions from people who are just afraid to vote no. And I guess that's what it is. They're just afraid to vote no because they don't want to be seen a certain way.
That's ridiculous. That's the job to vote
yes or no, unless you have a. You're kind of abusing the abstention, and I don't particularly care for it.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a business that's being voted on, right? You know that you could make money off. Then I get abstain and keeping your. But beyond that, yeah, is it? So you said there was not. It wasn't just the abstention of Councilman Gregory. It was multiple abstentions during that session.
Well, because you had 3 different maps on the same agenda, and so they had to, one by one, they voted on each one until they got 5 votes to pass it. And so you would see, you know, a block of council people, you know, abstain from the mayor's map. I think the mayor's map, you had Joel Daves voting yes and William Carroll voting no, and I think everybody else abstained. I hope I'm not... If I'm mistaken on that, I apologize. I don't have it in front of me. And then the second map, you had Joel vote yes, and you had a bunch of abstentions. And then the third map, you had 6 yeses, including Joel. Joel Daves ended up voting yes on all 3 of them, which I think is funny. And you had the one abstention from Gina Gregory. So you had almost multiple abstentions on each map.
Wow. And this is why you get the accurate and in-depth reporting. It's one of the reasons we'll talk about that. You need to be a subscriber for Lanyap. Now on to the other part of this. And this has been, I know there's reasons, but it left me scratching my head a whole bunch why we didn't move forward, or the council didn't move forward with deciding whether they're going to give the right of referendum to the places that want to be, or places that could be annexed before we redistricted. But that's not the way it goes. So what does this mean? Does this kick off the redistricting talk again?
Well, you know, it probably does if those, you know, residents of West Mobile are given the right to vote on whether to join the city. You're definitely going to see, I'm sure you're definitely going to see arguments that redistricting needs to happen again. This last meeting, though, at the pre-conference, Chris Arledge, the council attorney, said it's not like they don't legally have to. But if you're adding 26,000 people, and you're gonna, I mean, theoretically, you're gonna add those, you're gonna add those in, you know, 2 or 3 different districts.
Yeah, there's only so many districts that touch that, right? Unless you have some kind of crazy gerrymander.
2 or 3 districts. You could, I mean, you're gonna see District 6 grow if you annex. You're gonna see District 7 grow if you annex. And if you leave it as is, that's going to throw those way out of whack, right? So theoretically, you could get away with it without doing it, but I don't see how that's not, you know, bad governance to not do it. So I think you're going to have to, and so we may have to go through all this again. And I've said this on the show before, and I'll say it again. I know there's an argument to why waste the money and all that stuff, and those are very, very valid points, and I understand that. But at the same token, you make the argument that there's a level of trust in the council now that they won't go backwards on this pledge to have 4 black majority council districts now that we've seen it in action. So, or at least politically, it's a lot harder to go back on that and say, well, just kidding, we redistricted, and now we're back to three black majority districts. So I think it was very important for a large section of the community to see this annexation play out. I mean, to see this redistricting play out before we talk about annexation. Whether or not that'll move the needle on annexation, I don't know. But in my story, I noted some very interesting comments on annexation from folks on the council that had previously voted no, including C.J. Small, who basically said, hey, if we're going to annex and my, you know, and I'm going to get a big chunk of District 4 because everything will move, you know, everything will move west, and I get a big chunk of District 4, there's infrastructure needs that I'm going to have to deal with. Y'all are going to have to basically said, y'all are going to have to, if you're going to annex, I'm going to need more money to work with for infrastructure for that area. So I found that very interesting. You're starting to see that. And that's from C.J. Small, who's voted no on every annexation that's come before him that I know of, or since I've been here. So that's pretty interesting. You had some interesting comments from William Carroll and some interesting comments on Gina Gregory that make me think that, you know, this annexation proposal is definitely a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to read through, and we had talked about CJ in the past, Councilman Small in the past, but Councilman Carroll, to me, seemed like he was, well, I mean, he came in here, talked the morning show one day, he seemed like he was not for annexation. He's talking about the infill versus growing and all that, but you right here, he said he would only support annexation if it's equitable, fair, and just, but that's not a no, right?
It's not a no, and I think previous comments, he said it's, he said the plan he's seen is a quote unquote, I think he said good plan. Now he said that before about plans that he thought were good that he's voted against. So, or at least not voted for in the, as far as the Gaifers, but you bring up the Gaifers building. So who knows what these comments mean. And I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to put words in anybody's mouths or try to tell you how it's going to happen, but I will say, this is the best opportunity the city's going to have to annex this section of Mobile in a long, long time. So we'll have to see what happens.
All right. Tell folks, pick up a copy of Lanyap or do that online thing that helps fund this great journalism, how they do it.
Subscribe to lanyapmobile.com. Just go to the website, hit the subscribe button, walk through the prompts. You can also get the paper delivered when you subscribe, so those two things are available. But also, you can check us out in the purple boxes and around town in various racks. You know, we got one at the Midtown Winn-Dixie, for instance, and some other places like that. So just check us out. But we'd really like you to subscribe and support the work we're doing, so that we can continue to do it.
I appreciate
that
it.
That means a lot to us.
Hey, man, you mean a lot to the community. Dale, as always, I enjoy our conversations, and we'll pick it up again next week.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, big thank you, Dale Leash, Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. Hey, this segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Another friend of mine, Trey Bennett, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Been doing it 14 years now in Mobile and Baldwin counties, and it's just that. You got junk, you need it gone, you need Trey, and it's, maybe you're not going to do it, like, set the appointment today for maybe early next week when you're in the mood to tackle that, right? It's junk at a storage, maybe you got a storage unit you pay on every month, you don't even care what's in there, right? You get rid of it, or maybe a storage building at your house, or junk inside the house. Maybe you used to have a guest room, and it's now a junk room. It's okay to have a junk drawer in the kitchen, just not a junk room. And by the way, if you want to get organized around your house, pro tip here, I'm telling you, I'm preaching. It's a lot easier to organize fewer things. So get rid of the junk. It can be big stuff, small stuff, and get the crew that does a great job for me, folks around the station here, and for the stations. Cleaned out a storage unit for us, and a lot of folks that have called in the show, texted in the show, that use them as well. Go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com and make an appointment, or pick up the phone. The name is the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They'll find a day that works for you, a window of time that works for you, and then they'll show up when they say, All you do is walk around and point at the junk you want gone. So make that appointment today for maybe sometime next week. 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. And we'll get to the question about the warrant here on Mar-a-Lago from earlier. Some updates here coming in. Some updates definitely from earlier today. We'll get to those. But I want to say this, because I guess there was some confusion, which is not good, online, with people asking. So I put this out on Twitter earlier, and we put it on our Facebook page as well, that our friend and co-worker and continuing co-worker, Jeff Poor of The Jeff Poor Show, has been named executive editor of 1819news.com. Okay. So Jeff has been, so let me answer the quick question. He's not going anywhere. Jeff Poor Show's here. He has been, even through all these years you've been listening to Jeff, Jeff at the same time has been an editor at Breitbart.com, national website. Of course, you saw his work he did with YellowhammerNews.com for a long time, and now he'd been a contributor to 1819news.com. But he's a political he was a political editor. Now he's a boss man. So he is, good stuff. Executive editor at 1819news.com, our own Jeff Poor, who's up at Montgomery right now for the ALGOP meeting. But yeah, Jeff Poor Show, still here. He's, man works about three jobs, you know, in the time it takes most people to do one. So yeah, he is still here. He's still going to be part of this station, but he has and he's still living down here in our neck of the woods, but he is now the executive editor at 1819news.com. So that's great stuff. We're happy to have that news pass along, but he's not going anywhere. So no fears there. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Friday style. And so it might be a weekend thought process if you're thinking about selling your higher-end used boat. I've got an idea for you. A buddy of mine, Forrest, at Blue Water Yacht Sales, he's got a brokerage service that's all over the Gulf Coast, all over the country, and he is in the business of finding people that want to buy your boat. And this is, I've talked about this before, but he hadn't heard it. So because I'm a person that's owned more boats than vehicles in my life. I started early buying boats, fix them up, flip them, not the only one. And I remember talking to Forrest about this. I said, why would I bring my boat for you to sell versus me selling it on my own? He said, well, how much you like taking the people for a test drive, going down to Navco, right, and taking people for a test drive, or they're calling you at, 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, or people come out the house and kick the tires, they're really not interested, they're looking to just do something with their day. I was like, yeah, I know those things. He said, well, what if I could get you just as much money as you do selling it on your own, but just let me do the work? I said, okay, I'm in. And that's how his brokerage network works. He markets your boat all over the country. They know the best market for your boat. They know where the willing buyers are, the people that want the kind of boat you have, and they put it together, and you get just as much money as you would on your own, but you don't have to deal with the headaches. So do this. Give them a call. Get an appointment to go by. Have them take a look at the boat and get as much money as you would selling the boat yourself. BlueWaterYachtSales.net is their website. And the phone number, 476-2699. But if you'll just Google Blue Water Yacht Sales, you'll get, they've been doing it 50 years in Mobile. You'll get the information needed, and then you can call 476-2699, set up that appointment to stop by, and you see what they can do. And for a minimum cost as well, they'll make sure your boat's in top shape so you can get the top dollar for it and it's ready to sell. So if you're, you're selling that one to get your next boat, or for some cockamamie reason you're thinking, I don't want to do a boat anymore, I'm not here to judge you. If you're going to do this, do it with Blue Water Yacht Sales. It's a no-brainer. Check them out online, bluewateryachtsales.net. Give them a call, 476-2699. Ask for Forrest. The Trump search warrant is out. Remember, this is the... And by the way, we waited around... Remember when I tell you about Washington time? We waited around. We were supposed to have that press conference 1:30 yesterday, or even not even a press conference, a statement from Merrick Garland, and it was like 35 minutes late in only 5 minutes. Here's some more on this. So from Fox News, they're reporting, they go through the story of what happened on Monday. And it says U.S. Magistrate Judge Bruce Reinhardt, who there's a whole other conversation to have around that person, signed the warrant on August 5th, giving the FBI authority to conduct its search on or before August 19th, 2022. In the daytime, 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. is their time frame on this thing. Says here, and this is part of that, the warrant, says the locations to be searched include the 45 office, so I guess for 45th president, 45 office, all storage rooms, and all other rooms or areas within the premises used or available to be used by F. POTUS, so former president of the United States, and his staff, and in which boxes or documents could be stored, including all structures or buildings on the estate. That's from the warrant. It did not give the authority to the agents to search areas being occupied by Mar-a-Lago members or not used by Trump and staff. Goes on in the Fox News story here, said the warrant gave agents the authorities to, quote, seize all physical documents and records constituting evidence, contraband, fruits of crime, or other items illegally possessed. End quote, and they would be in the violation of U.S. code, and it gives a code here. It includes documents and classification markings and presidential records created between January 20th, 2017 and January 20th, 2021. According to the property receipt that was received by Fox News, FBI agents, and this is what everybody's talking about, what they took. FBI agents took approximately 20 boxes of items from the premises, including one set of documents marked as various classified slash TS slash SCI documents, end quote, which refers to top secret and sensitive information. The property receipt also shows the FBI agents collected four sets of top secret documents, three sets of secret documents, and three sets of confidential documents. That's like gold, silver, bronze, I guess. A property receipt does not reveal any details about those records. The list also includes a, quote, leather-bound box of documents, end quote, binders of photos, handwritten notes, miscellaneous documents, miscellaneous top secret documents, miscellaneous confidential documents, and other records. The former president and his team are disputing the classification and believe the information and records to have been declassified. And you know that part, right? That the president of the United States can make that decision. So just like declassifying several things. That was one of the, you know, early on when former President Trump got into office and said, we're going to declassify this and that. And a lot of us out there like that. So they're arguing, I guess the attorneys and Trump are arguing that the documents that the FBI seized were all declassified. So I guess they're saying in the warrant that the and the you know the log of the things they seized, they said they were classified, you know, on down the line to confidential. And former President Trump and his attorneys are saying no, they weren't. Here's a quote Trump said on Truth Social: all were declassified. Number one, it was all declassified. Number two, they didn't need to seize anything. They could have had it anytime they wanted without playing politics and breaking into Mar-a-Lago. Trump also added, it was in a secured storage with additional lock put on as per their request. End quote. So we talked about that earlier in the week. It goes back, and we'll see. I mean, there's obviously the war of words going on here. But I've asked that question, what I thought was a simple question, to a lot of folks that I've interviewed this week on the show. Is this something that could have been done with attorneys and say, hey, we need those documents, we need those boxes? Did it have to be a raid? Maybe something will be shown that says it is. Right now, though, I just got this question. Could you have not done it another way? It goes on here. Former President Trump said the Biden administration is in obvious damage control after their botched raid where they seized the president's picture books, handwritten note, and declassified. Oh, this was Taylor Butowich to Fox News. So a Trump spokesperson. They said, yeah, Biden administration's in obvious damage control after their botched raid where they seized the president's picture books, a handwritten note, and declassified documents. This raid of President Trump's home was not just unprecedented, but unnecessary, and they are leaking lies and innuendos to try to explain away the weaponization of government against their dominant political opponent. This is outrageous. Okay, and then you remember yesterday, you probably had to go listen to it later because they didn't get around to the presser at 1:30, but Attorney General Merrick Garland yesterday in his four minutes of comments said, in light of the former president's public confirmation of the search, the surrounding circumstances, and the substantial public interest in this matter, this is why they did the question, well, not even, it's statement. It went on to say the public's clear and powerful interest in understanding what occurred under these circumstances weighs heavily in favor of unsealing. End quote. The DOJ's motion states, noting that Trump should have the opportunity to respond to the motion and, quote, lodge objections, including with regard to any legitimate private interest or the potential for any other inquiry if the materials were made public. So it's kind of where it stands right now. That's the things that they seized there. We'll find out. I mean, I guess maybe we won't. I mean, right now you're getting the war of words. I mean, is it something as simple? If the documents were not classified, if former President Trump is being truthful here, he's being truth social, and says they were not classified, then what was it? And even if they were, and once again, something might be shown that shows me why it had to happen that way, but it seems like something could have been conducted by attorneys on both sides saying, hey, when we were down there in June and we sealed up that room, we went back and looked, and there are some of those documents that we think need to be back in the National Archives collecting dust. So we need to pick them up. Just questions I think a lot of us have. All right, coming back, Ed Rowan from Taylor Martino. Rowan joins me talking about the water at Camp Lejeune and who it might have affected. It's all straight ahead right here on Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Talk with Ed Rowan from Taylor Martino Rowan, your law firm currently helping individuals who are exposed to contaminated water at Camp Lejeune. It's a marine base, isn't it?
That is one of the main marine bases. It is. It's one of the three in the world. And unfortunately, there's some bad water that has caused cancer and birth defects for a lot of people that lived in that area.
Now, we talk about cases affecting members of the military. It's always personal for you. You're a Marine. You're a Marine that actually knows Camp Lejeune, too.
Right. I was in Camp Lejeune in 1990, and so I missed the deadline to be a plaintiff. I hadn't had cancer, thank the good Lord. But 1987 is the end time period, and starts in 1953 when the bad water existed there that had tons of contaminants in there, cancer-causing contaminants, other things that, like I said, caused illnesses for the people that were there much later. Mm-hmm. As well as birth defects, as well as stillborn babies and miscarriages. Yeah, it's horrible.
So we know this is personal to you now on multiple levels. We've talked about this. I remember you and I talking about the earplug issue and how personal it was to you and talking to members of the military. Obviously, this is your Marines, man. This is y'all.
Yeah, doing the earplug cases, I mean, it's just been an incredible honor to represent people from all of the branches. And I respect anybody that serves their country. But, you know, I mean, I'm a Marine. And we kind of stick together. So it's a different type of a situation because we're going after the government for lying to us, and which they did. And the government has admitted that they lied and has admitted that because they lied, they caused a lot of harm to people. So it's a much different lawsuit than really I've ever been involved with from, you know, that standpoint.
So this is the water. I mean, when you're at Camp Lejeune, this is the water. The water you drink, the water they probably make the food with, the water you shower in, everything.
Right. So when you're at Camp Lejeune, you know, you take a glass of water or maybe you've had some weird tasting water, very minerally or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it is just minerals. But in this case, it was literally contaminated water with chemicals and the
toxic chemicals, it says in the story I was reading about it, toxic chemicals.
Yeah, benzene, you know, a lot of these chemicals you can't pronounce the name of,
right,
you know, unless you're a scientist, but bad chemicals, and it tasted funny, and people complained about it, and the military actually, and the U.S. government told the people that were staying there and near there that it was just minerals, and it was actually good for them, so they should drink more of the water.
Wait a second. This is the part I didn't check out, Ed. So instead of just not saying anything, which is already an issue, they said, oh, it's good for you?
Drink more water. It's good for you. And that was completely the opposite of true. It was false. They knew it was false, and as a result, like I said, I mean,
so they knew that these toxic chemicals were in there, is what you're saying. They knew this, and then even after that, they were telling people, yeah, drink the water. It's fine. Drink some more.
Yeah, the fortunate thing about, you know, being subject to the government is, you know, the government is somewhat immune from suit, and you know, you can have some bad actors that can do some things that can cause harm to people. It happened in this case. Congress realized it, and they're passing the Campus Union Justice Act, which is going to allow these folks that were there from 1953 to 1987 to have an independent cause of action, or it could be a loved one. Most of the folks I'm representing right now, they've already passed away from cancer, and so I'm representing their estate, or, you know, their client is basically their spouse.
So, I mean, you're listening to us, family members that were at Camp Lejeune from 1950s.
Early 1950s to the late 1980s.
And you mentioned cancer, but I'm looking through this list. You kind of rolled through it before. I mean, Parkinson's disease.
Right.
Like you said, miscarriage, female infertility. I mean, things that you might not even think. I mean, you get into these cancers here, that's like clustering, but there's some of these things that, like cardiac defects. I mean, things that people might not link. They say, oh, it's cancer. It seems on this list a lot of things.
And this is, it's legitimate. These things have been studied scientifically by the EPA, by independent scientists, and it's become clear what has caused these cancers and birth defects and stillborn babies and other ailments. The government has admitted that and has been admitting it since around 2010, 2012, but not until just recently has this act come through Congress, and it passed the Senate 84 to 14. And, you know, there have been some procedural hurdles, but it's going to be passed, you know, hopefully in the next month or two.
Yeah, also interesting here, reading through this, as more information comes out about Camp Lejeune drinking water illnesses, this list of diseases and cancers could change. It could increase. There could be things that aren't even on this list right now.
Right. There's a list of 17 different ailments that is accepted currently by the VA and has been accepted by the VA since about 2012. But there's really more like 50 or 60 things that are more likely actually caused by it that we think that list is going to be expanded.
You're talking about the, you know, the what happens to mothers bearing children, that were those children too, and not just, I mean, if they were a child or they were, you know, they were drinking that water, their mothers were drinking that water, they're also eligible to file in these lawsuits.
Right. I don't know if you noticed this, Sean, but there's a lot more cancer going around now. I mean, yeah. It's weird. Yeah. I go to funerals all the time, mm-hmm. of cancer. People that lose their battle with cancer. And most of it is environmental. And it's pretty sad. Something is causing it that's being put into our water or otherwise. And this is a case where, you know, somebody, a loved one, died of cancer. They happened to be a Marine or spouse of a Marine, lived on base or near base at Camp Lejeune. And, you know, they're finding out much later that, you know, these bad things were in the water there. The government knew about it, didn't do anything about it, lied to the folks that were drinking that water, told them to drink more water. And, you know, now there's a cause of action. And so bad things were done, and that's what the legal system's about.
I mean, do you have any idea the number of people? Because, I mean, you're talking about Marines that were at Camp Lejeune, family members as well. I mean, there's a few that are proud of the Marines, but there's a bunch over, you know, for decades we could be talking about, a lot of people.
There's three divisions of the Marines, three main bases in the Marines. So, and Camp Lejeune was one of those three. So, I mean, you think about the number of Marines that came through from 1953 through 87. I haven't calculated that figure.
It's a bunch of people. I mean, and right. Yeah, like you said, and spouses and children, you know.
Right.
So people listening to us right now got to be thinking, okay, well, even if it wasn't, you know, them, it was, oh, well, Dad was there. Or my grandfather was there.
That's right.
They were Marine. They were at Lejeune. I remember that.
If your loved one was at Camp Lejeune in that time period and had cancer or some weird condition, but mostly cancer, or, you know, there's a...
But gosh, there's a big list of other things, too. Yeah.
Bad water, benzene, and all these other chemicals are terrible for developing baby. And so I'm hearing about, and I'm actually seeing... folks that were born at Camp Lejeune with severe defects and severe health problems. And that's really the most tragic thing, you know, for an innocent child in gestation to be infected like that.
Oh, my gosh. So if somebody's listening to us that does, you know, you have for them said, okay, that is us. That's our family. That's this family member. What do they do? They have these conditions. They knew, or they maybe sometimes, you know how this is. Somebody knows that somebody died of something, right? It was my father. It was some kind of cancer, but I don't remember. They come to you first. Can you figure those things out?
Yeah, I mean, just information, right? Yeah. I mean, just they need to call us and get information, and we'll talk to them, you know, freely, of course, and no strings attached. So just call my firm, Taylor Martina Rowan, and talk to me, or just say I'm calling about the bad water cases at Camp Lejeune, and we'll put you with the right person.
Yeah, call up and ask for the Marine. Ask for Ed Rowan. Thanks for coming in.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
All right, Ed Rowan with Taylor Martino Rowan.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.